There you go.
Hi, everybody. My name is Joe. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a grateful member of the Alston Brighton Tuesday night group, which you may have noticed is not in District 21. So, but somebody asked me to speak, and when somebody asks me to do stuff in AA, I try not to say no. So I grew up in Brighton. Brighton, if you're not familiar with the city of Boston, it's a part of the city of Boston, and it's right at the edge, the western edge of the city. And actually, I grew up only a couple of houses from the Newton line. And I grew up in a, you know, it was a nice neighborhood growing up. It was, we had kids from both sides of the line. And the kids on my side, the people, the families on my side, they were always, they were all kind of blue collar workers. My father worked for the post office. And on the other side of there was a, all the people, the kids were from, you know, families with doctors and stuff. And in the middle was a private prep school and St. Sebastian's. And that was kind of a playground. They had a hockey rink and football field. And, you know, like the kids, there were a ton of kids in the neighborhood. And, you know, it was a good time growing up. It was a good place to grow up. I went to a Catholic grammar school you know, I never really, when I growing up, I never really saw alcohol in the family. My father was in World War II, and he was not an alcoholic, but he was an angry guy. And, you know, so I kind of grew up in that type of household with, you know, walking on pins and needles and walking on eggshells or whatever. And, you know, so my first escape as a kid was reading. And it wasn't until I got sober that I realized that that was kind of an escape in its own right for a, you know, a young kid. And, you know, that was the way it was. The only thing I knew about alcohol is my father would, he'd cut the lawn or something, and he'd have a Carling's Black Label and a 16-ounce bottle, and he'd pour it into a glass, and he'd give me what was left. And I always liked the taste of beer. I had no conceptions of it getting a buzz off it or anything. But, you know, I do remember my mother saying to him, you know, don't give him that. You'll turn him into a toper. My mother was from Ireland, and she probably knew what she was looking at, because her and three of her siblings had come from, when they were in their late teens, early 20s, had all come to Boston and settled and to start a new life. And a lot of their friends from Ireland, they would be talking about, you know, going back there. They'd be going back and forth to visit relatives all the time. But my mother and her siblings, they'd never talk nostalgically about what they left behind. And so, which makes me to think, you know, you don't have to shake an Irish family tree for a drunk to fall out. So I think even back in those days, my mother kind of knew what she was looking at. But like I said, I had no real, you know, inclinations as to what the beer was going to do to me down the line. But I said, I like the taste of it. I started working when I was 14. I was washing dishes in a nursing home. It was always important for me to have my own money, because I never really got along with my father. Even after I got sober, until he passed away, we always were at odds. And so it was very important for me to have my own money. So I started working. When I was 16, I got a job at a tennis club. And I started there on my 16th birthday. And there, my people-pleasing tendencies tended kicked in. And I, you know, like they were telling me I was doing a good job. And I was getting more and more responsibility, and I was just keep that job until I graduated from college. I was there for 7 years altogether. Meanwhile, the first time I got drunk, I was probably about 14 or 15. It was over on the Newton side of that line, and some friends had some older brothers and sisters, and they had a keg there that night. And, you know, I kept going back to the keg over the course of the night. And I had, when I walked back to my own side of the hill, I had this nice little buzz on, and I spent most of the next 20 years chasing that feeling. I did all right in school. I got a scholarship to a good school on the other side of the city, and I commuted there, and, you know, life was good. I, you know, like I said, I always had money in my pocket because I always was working, and, you know, life was good. When it came time to go to college, I had, you know, the only thing I knew for sure was that I was not going to go to not going to stay home. And I went to a school in the middle of the state, and it was a small school, and I didn't go there because it was a party school. And to be truthful, it really wasn't a party school. It was more like a drinking school. And it was a small campus, and it seemed like every dorm had little that they'd alternate over the course of the weekends. Every weekend, somebody Friday and Saturday with the dorms, they would like have a little mini VFW down in the basement of the dorm. And, you know, and it seemed to me like everybody in that school was getting drunk every Friday and Saturday night. And looking back on it, it was probably only the people that I hung around with, because everything we did, revolved around beer, whether it was the stuff on campus, whether it was going out. When I first got sober, there was a woman in my group who used to say that she could never understand why anyone would go to eat at McDonald's or Friendly's or anything, because there was no booze there. And I totally related to that, because everything we did was revolved around drinking. And it was a time when I think the administration of the school was more like, as long as they keep it on the campus, then it's cool, and I'll go out in the city. And something you could not have got away with in later years, but it was kind of to set a pattern for my life, was that I would always gravitate towards the drinkers. When it came time, I graduated from college. I had a liberal arts degree. School always kind of came. It never really affected I probably could have done better in school, but I did okay. But I had a liberal arts degree, and I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. I missed the structure. I think when I had the structure of school, it was kind of like a game plan. And when I get out in the real world, I didn't really know. I got a job and moved in with some friends, and it was the year of the happy hours. We moved into an apartment in Lower Ralston, and we did that post-college thing for a couple of years. We went to the bars, we did the house parties, and the young single life, and life was good. I bought the lie alcohol told me that I could have a life and still drink the way I did when I was a college kid. And after a while, that as I get into my mid to late 20s, the people around me, they were starting to get established in careers. They were starting to get, have families, and basically they were becoming adults, and I was still kind of muddling along. So what happened was I got an offer of a job in another city. So I went out there for like a year, and, nothing dramatic happened. I kept drinking, but drinking was such a part of my life at this point that it really, it was just part of who I was. It didn't really, I didn't have any jackpots or anything. But when I came back like a year later, I never really hooked back up with the people I grew up with, the people I went to high school and college with. I started hanging around the bars, and that became the center of my social life. And, that was the way it was. And as I get into my late 20s, early 30s, what was happening was the beer stopped working. And for a long part of my drinking career, I always wanted to be the paradox of being an alcoholic. I wanted to get drunk, but I also wanted to try to control it. And somewhere along the way, the beer stopped working. And drinking hard stuff, things were sad. I was getting into little jackpots. And, what was happening around me was that, everything was getting less and less. The jobs were getting less and less. The places to live were getting less and less. And I always, in my mind, I always thought that if I got the right girlfriend or the right job or the right apartment, that everything would fall into place, and that I wouldn't drink the way I was drinking. But as long as I was drinking the way I was drinking, none of those things were going to happen. And basically what happened in the later years of my drinking was that I basically pushed everybody out of my life. I pushed my family out of my life. If I get into a relationship, I'd usually do something to sabotage it. And it was only after I got sober that I realized that, what I was doing was I was protecting my right to drink. So I went into my 30s, and, I was just kind of like, like I said, I was just adrift. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And, and the alcohol had become basically an around the clock proposition. If I was awake, I was drinking, and I was drinking, couldn't relate to hangovers when I first came into this program. And it took me a while to realize that I didn't get hangovers because I always had some level of alcohol in my system. At any given time in the last couple of years of my drinking, I probably would have been considered legally drunk, but because that was my norm, it didn't really show as such. And what happened was I landed in this program for the first time overdosing on alcohol. And I woke up in Brigham and Women's Hospital the morning of the Patriots' first Super Bowl appearance in 1986. And there's a scene in the movie Postcards from the Edge where Meryl Streep had overdosed and woke up in a hospital bed. And there was a doctor sitting next to the bed. And he asked her, "Were you trying to kill yourself?" And she looked at him like he was crazy. And she said, "Of course not." And basically I had that same moment. They were asking me, was I trying to do something to myself? And, no, I was just drinking. And so given the circumstances, they suggested that maybe I should go to alcohol treatment. And at that time in my life, I knew nothing about alcohol treatment. I knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous. Every once in a while, somebody would disappear from the bars and they wouldn't, they'd come back, and they weren't exactly giving glowing reviews to AA, but I really had no idea what it was all about. And ironically enough, at that time in my life, it was one of the rare times that I actually had good health insurance, and I could have gone to one of those fancy places that they had back in those days, but I didn't know any better. So I went to a public 28-day program. And when I came out of there, I, uh, the first meeting I went to was back in Brighton where I'd grown up. And I remember the first meeting was at the old Granada House when I was on the grounds of the Marine Hospital. And it was called the Island Shells Group. And when I went there, that was on a Tuesday night. And I went there and I ran into this guy that had been a drinking buddy in the Oak Square Grill. And he said he belonged to the Alston Friday night group and that I should go down there and meet him on Friday night. And so I went down there on next Friday night. I met on the Jackson Mann School, which was like about a quarter of a mile straight shot from my first apartment out of college. And it was a huge meeting. There were probably, you know, there was at least 100, 150 people there. It was a big school cafeteria. And, you know, and I could have gone to that meeting dozens of times and I would have been way too intimidated to join the group, but he took me up to the secretary and they signed me up. So they said they were going for a commitment. They were going on a commitment the next night. And that would have was a Saturday night and they met for commitments at Riley's Roast Beef. And Riley's was a fast food joint that was open till 3 a.m. in the middle of all the bars. So I was familiar with the place. And so not having a lot of my social calendar at that particular time in my life, I went down there that next night. And, you know, I looked in there and, you know, I looked in the window and I vaguely recognized some of the people from that had been at the meeting the night before. And, you know, anything in my life up to that point would have said that I would have looked in there and I said, oh, I'll come back another night. But for whatever reason, I went, you know, went through those doors and went on that commitment with those people. And that's where the journey began, because, you know, you can go to a lot of meetings around here, but you don't really get the full flavor of Alcoholics Anonymous until you start participating. And so it was great. The first 90 days I was able, there was a big active group, went on a lot of commitments. And, you know, for the first 90 days, it was great because I didn't have to get up there and speak. But after a while, I, you know, like it started to get a little hairy when I got there. So I've stayed about 3 or 4 months. But really what was going on was that I didn't really know why I was here. I don't know whether I thought I was going to learn how to drink like a gentleman or whether I was what I was going to do, actually. But, you know, I didn't stick around. So I went back out a couple of more times. You know, unlike the two previous speakers, I did not get it the first time around. But what I did get, what I do know is that by coming back, by going back out there, I knew what I had lost, and I have a greater appreciation, I think, for what I have today. So I came back for, and the last time I came back for the last, for I hope is the last time, on October the 1st of 1988, and I've been here ever since. And it wasn't a slam dunk that I was going to rejoin that Alston Friday night group, but because by then I was a couple of time loser, and I was, you know, the self-centered fear of the alcoholic, I was going to, they were going to be looking at me and saying, oh yeah, how long is he going to stay this time? And but what happened was one of the first meetings I went to, who was the commitment, but the Alston Friday night group. And I ran into this guy that I'd known from the year before. And I'd been running with him the year before. And he said, are you coming back to the group? And I said, oh, I don't know. And he said, well, I'm celebrating my year tonight, this Friday night. Why don't you come? So I went there that Friday night and, you know, I inherited a coffee job from him. And you know, I think maybe in my mind, I thought that if he can do it, maybe I can too. So what happened was that when I rejoined that Alston group in 1988, a lot of the old timers had left to form the 50 plus group, which was the precursor of my present group. And a lot of the old timers had left to get away from the people that were talking about drugs. And so I got sober with a whole different group of people. You know, we had a lot of young people. We had people that did occasionally talk about drugs. But what we had was a lot of people that, you know, had a willingness to be sober. We didn't have a lot of people that had a ton of sobriety, but we had a lot of people that chased the program. And, you know, and basically we grew up together. We had, you know, probably 20 or 30 people that circulated through that group in the next couple of years. And most of those people are still sober today because of the foundation that we built in that group. We used to go on a ton of commitments. I always say that if I had to depend on the telephone in early sobriety, I probably would have been in trouble. But all I had to do was show up at Riley's and we'd go out together. And there were a lot more detoxes then than there are now, and we hit all of them. We were regulars at every detox, you know, probably within a 40-mile radius. And, you know, and that's where the journey really began, because when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I wasn't the most likely candidate to join AA. I was the type that was, my attitude was always, I got myself into this and I can get myself out of it. You know, that same 14-year-old kid that had to have his own money had trouble asking for help. And I had to learn how to ask for help from other people. And I had to learn how to ask for help from a higher power. And, you know, and I did that by actively becoming a member of a group. You know, there was a book out a few years ago that said everything I learned in my life, I learned in kindergarten. And, you know, everything I learned in my life, I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous by being a member of a group. And if you've ever been a member of a large group, sometimes the behavior can be like kindergarten. But, you know, but really, you know, I had to learn how to accept help, and that's what I did. And for me, the most important thing in my life today is still being an active member of a group. You know, like some of the people that spoke in the beginning, I've been active in service over the years. I've been on the steering committee at several central service a number of times, and a bunch of the Lowell people I got to know through then. And now I'm the alternate DCM for District 14. And, you know, service isn't for everybody, but if you're getting stagnant in your own, you know, routine of regular meetings, then, you know, give it a shot. It's worth it. You know, you meet a lot of good people that way. What happened was that a lot of the people that were got sober with me in that group, they did what Alcoholics Anonymous is supposed to do. They get married, move to the burbs. They're scattered all over the country today, but most of them are still sober because of that foundation that we built in that group. A couple of months ago, there was one of the guys that's in my current group. Actually, so I rejoined those old timers in the 50 plus group. So one of the people that was in the Allston Friday night group with me was he celebrated 30 years a couple of months ago. And we had six speakers from four different states because of that. You know, everybody, we've known each other for all this time. And, you know, and it's still, you still have to take, be an active participant in your own recovery. This is an action program. There was a guy, there was an old timer. It used to be in our group. He said, it's like that Puerto Rican food, Goya, get off your ass. And, you know, like, that's what you got to do. And for me, it's still most important is to participate because, you know, everything I have in my life, I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and we still have a strong group. The other night, the 10th, which I guess was Wednesday, was the 1 year anniversary from our last meeting in person. And, you know, and it's tough not meeting in person, but we still have an active group. We were on a commitment last night in Marblehead on Zoom, and we had like 12
minutes, Joe.
And so, you know, the strongest recommendation I can give for anyone that's new is to become a member of a group. You know, I've seen a lot of people over the years that, you know, go to a ton of meetings, but they don't stay sober because they don't participate, you know. And, you know, for me, the only, you know, like the most important thing in me is still being an active member of a group. So if you want what we have, come along with us. Don't drink.